You know I'm right. Nick Durst here with Joe Calabrese. Joe, we've had a lot of great guests on our show, but it's not every day we get to speak with a living legend and a pioneer in his industry himself. He was a tough guy to pin down. We were in the submission lock. We're not going to tap out. We made sure we get him on here. Tell our loyal listeners who their special guest is here today with us.
I don't think I really need to go any further than you did. I would like to call him, and I don't know if anybody's ever called him this before, but to us and to a lot of other people, I would consider him the father of combat sports journalism. Wow. He was one of the first to do it. He's still doing it today, almost 30 years later. And you can find him at the Wrestler Observer newsletter. So without further ado, we have Dave Meltzer on our program. Wow, I can't believe I'm saying that. Dave, welcome to You Know I'm Right. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well, Dave. We're good. Excited to have you on here, and we got a lot of things to discuss. But first, we want to get a little more on your background here. Obviously, you're well known with wrestling, of course, and MMA. But when you were a kid growing up, first on the East Coast, go to the West Coast. Who were some of the initial wrestlers you could remember, and who kind of made you get interested in the industry?
I mean, I first got interested because when I was in fifth grade, all the guys watched wrestling. Everybody did. We played baseball in the afternoon, and then at 4:30 we rushed home to watch the end of the bowling on ABC. And then we only watched bowling because it was on right before wrestling. And then we would watch wrestling right after. So that was kind of how I got hooked on it. But Billy Graham's promos were probably the most important, but I think I would have ended up being a fan because if I wanted to fit in with the crowd I was with, I had to have a knowledge of wrestling. So I got the knowledge of wrestling. But for whatever reason, it really hooked me immediately. Like I was just fascinated by it. And I think I got more fascinated by it when I started traveling with my parents to different places. And when we did, there was always a wrestling show, but it's a different wrestling. So it was like, oh my God, there's like this stuff. And like we go to Los Angeles, we got different wrestlers and different angles, and they're talking about their own matches. And we go to Hawaii and it's like, we got, and you would know some of the guys, and I was reading the magazine. So pretty much I actually knew most of the guys from the magazines, but some of the guys who had wrestled in the San Francisco area, those guys went from place to place all the time. So, went to Florida and watched Florida wrestling, which was awesome. And finally they invented videotape recorders and I could get tape everywhere. So that pretty much, from that point on, I was pretty much hooked watching all the areas. And then soon after, all the areas died. And wrestling changed again.
Yeah, no doubt about that. That's for sure. So you went to San Jose State University for journalism. Going into school there, what was your plan there coming out? Did you say, oh, maybe I'll become a beat reporter, I'll work for some sort of newspaper covering a team or whatnot? What was your goal going into college?
So when I was in college, I was sure I was going to end up being a sports writer, and I would start in small markets and build my way up to big markets. And I didn't know where I would end up, but I was sure that I was going to end up like covering the NFL or something like that. So, yeah.
So did you have an interest writing when you were younger? Because we have a lot of people on our show prior, and a lot of them would start writing for the school newspaper in high school. Doing some stuff in college. So when did you realize you had an interest and a talent for writing? And did you do anything while you were in college, stuff related to internships or stuff like that?
Okay, so my cousin told me that I was doing this when I was 5 years old. So apparently I did that. But I every morning I would write up all the baseball scores and things like that, like after, studying them and everything like that. And so I guess I was doing that when I was five, and I started doing the California Wrestling Report when I was 11. So that was my first newsletter. When I was in high school, I did I was on the high school newspaper staff, and college the same. And so I was always doing that. Yeah. I mean, that was always, I couldn't even tell you when, probably from watching the Odd Couple television show, which was like real famous show in the United States, where one of the characters was a sports writer. And I was like, that's going to be me. I'm going to have
Did you watch the reboot a few years ago with Matthew Perry?
No, I did not. I watched one of the reboots, which I thought was terrible. You could never match the original one. So I always thought I was going to be, was going to end up being this divorced guy with sandwiches in his bed and things like that, but being a really good sports player. That's what I thought when I was like, you know, like 11 years old. That's, I'm going to be like that. And then I'm going to cover the World Cup.
Funny. So you graduate, right? You start, you're working, you're in Wichita Falls, Times Record, and then you go to the Turlock Journal. What kind of assignments were they giving you there at those papers?
I was doing, when you're at papers that small, you all sports. I actually did the Oakland Tribune when I was in college, which I did college. I mean, high school football, high school basketball, mostly high school track. And in those, you know, it was in those cities, it was mostly high school and local college. So I did, you know, which were small colleges. So I did high school and college, but I did like Dallas Cowboys when I was in Wichita Falls, and I did some pro football when I was in Turlock. We did, you know, a bit of everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Cowboys, just national team, I guess. So every paper must've had somebody following the Cowboys.
Yeah. I did a Cowboys game. And I think it was a Thanksgiving game. And then rushed to Reunion Arena to watch Perry Von Erich and Michael Hayes cage match at Reunion Arena the same night. It's Thanksgiving 1983. Did both in Dallas, yeah. And Sam was at both too. When he came in to see both shows.
So I wanted to ask, when did you put two and two together and realize that there was a whole or a vacancy regarding how, we'll call it sports entertainment, but pro wrestling and the territories and stuff. When did you realize that there was a vacancy there in terms of journalistic coverage? And when did you ultimately decide that this is something that I can take advantage of? It's something that interests me very greatly, and I feel like I'm knowledgeable and the person to basically start this brand of journalism, which up to that point, I think it probably existed, but not so much in the way that it does today. So when did you realize that?
Oh, that's a tough question. When I was like 11 years old, I mean, Mike Tenay was doing a newsletter with Steve Weirman, and you know, that was when I saw what they were doing, you know, I mean, so I guess that would be the point. There were other newsletters, and there was always newsletters around, but I think that the Observer took off in the 80s because wrestling changed so much in the 80s when, you know, the magazines were not covering it the way they probably should have during the wrestling war. So a lot of people were looking for answers, like what's going on, you know, what's going on. So I tried to fill that. So I would say 84, when Vince expanded, was really the catalyst of the, I mean, I had already done the Observer, and the catalyst of doing the Observer was the invention of the videotape recorder and it being priced at a price that we can sort of afford it. So then I was trading tapes with everyone, but the real takeoff point would have been Vince's expansion in 84.
Right. And that's the same year Hogan wins the title, correct?
Right. Right. You know, like literally I didn't even know it at the time, but the most, like it was really big was, Hogan had no-showed a Christmas show in 1983 in St. Paul, and nobody knew why. You know, it's like, it's Hulk Hogan, he no-showed a show. And then the next day he's on a WWF show in St. Louis. And then I started asking around, and it's like, what's going on? And Piper was on it too. You know, it was a TV taping with David Schultz and Gene Okerlund. And it's like, Vince is going national, and they're going to be his guys, and they're leaving their territories. Schultz left AWA and leaving with no notice, and there's a war on. And it was like, oh, wow. And that kind of, that was like the beginning of the complete change of professional wrestling.
Yeah. So you launched the Observer, I would say you're probably around 24, if I did my math correctly, or early 20s.
I was in college when I launched the Observer. So I was 20, 22, 23, something.
Right, not bad. Am I guess there, but you know, when did you get to a point where you kind of said, this is a little too much for me on my own. Maybe I need to bring some other people in some aspects. I mean, just a thing, just from the perspective of getting things mailed out and whatnot, it seems like it initially is probably a lot of work for you by yourself.
It was a lot of work with very little return, but I loved doing it. And I did it pretty much on my own. I mean, up until, I couldn't tell you when, 2008 was when I called up Brian Alvarez and said,
wow,
I'm going crazy. I need help. I cannot do this at this pace anymore. My brain is going to die. And that's why we started the other thing. I mean, he and I had been friends for years. So that was the point of starting going into the website and everything like that.
So how much is, you know, different has things been from when you started till now with digital media? Does it make things more difficult, more hard? And then also, how do you decide, because we always ask people who are in journalism this, but how do you decide whether or not, you know, if you have a good story that you should actually write it up and get it on your website versus I got to tweet this out right away because I don't want to be outspoofed by somebody?
I don't really worry about being first stories. I just want to be the most detailed. But yeah, it's completely different. I mean, I lived on the telephone for decades. All I did, I had like freaking my ears hurt all the time. My voice was gone from talking so much. That's all I did was talk on the phone and write. And then now I don't do a lot of talking on the phone. I do some, but it's mostly, you know, email. And then like, as far as stories, yeah, I mean, sometimes you'll tweet something out. Sometimes you'll write it up on the website first. Sometimes I'll save it for the newsletter. But, you know, that usually, often that's a bad idea because if I know something, the odds are somebody else is going to know it within a day and the newsletter comes out once a week. So it's, but, you know, it just depends on the situation, you know. But I'm more worried about, like, on these stories, talking to a lot of different people and trying to get the most well-rounded story as opposed to being, you know, the first one, you know, breaking the story, so to speak. But sometimes I do that too.
Yeah, definitely. So obviously with wrestling, you had all those connections because you were going for years. When UFC first launches, you know, UFC one, you're there. Curious how you...
I was not at UFC one, but I watched UFC one. I started covering UFC with UFC one.
Right.
And then I started going to UFC at UFC 5, I think, was the first one. Then I went to almost all of them for a long time. And now I don't go that often, but, you know, it's like you don't have to because it's on TV. And there was pay-per-view then, too. But I went to a lot of them, which was really a lot of fun at that point in time. Going to the UFC was completely different than it is now also. Yeah.
So what are the primary differences between covering something legitimate like a boxing or something mixed martial arts like UFC as opposed to the coverage that you do for pro wrestling as a whole? Is there any difference, different channels that you have to go through, different people? Do people in like UFC or stuff that you've done previously, are they a little more rigid when it comes to information that they give you that they don't want to necessarily get out? So what are the primary differences there, if there are any?
I don't think there's differences as far as a UFC versus pro wrestling. I mean, you have to cover them differently because you're covering one as a performance and one as a sport. But I mean, as far as the businesses go, the businesses are actually very similar. But as far as it's like, it's more companies and each company has its own way of doing things. And some companies are really easy to deal with and some companies are difficult, but you can kind of understand where they are. And then there's always the personality conflicts with people in different companies. So I don't think it's very different as far as, you know, like MMA versus pro wrestling. The coverage isn't that much different, but the companies are all very different. So dealing with them, and they all have their different ways of doing things and things they don't want out, and different leaders. I think they're all kind of like, I think that most of like the PR guys and people like that in all the companies, those guys are usually pretty similar to me and they're usually pretty cool. But the you know, they have to work for their bosses, and all these companies, you know, whether it's WWE or UFC or whatever, they are very much what word I'm looking for. They're very much like their bosses, which determines, and the nature of their boss and the personality of their boss determines all of this. So if they have a boss who's really cool, then everybody's cool. If they have a boss who isn't, then most people are still cool, but they're way more guarded and they're way more nervous and things like that when dealing with you. Whereas some companies, nobody's nervous with me at all. And it's other companies, it's like, they're very careful, I would say.
So on top of Brian, who has assisted you now for the better part of 10 plus years, who are other people who work in other companies who have been instrumental in ultimately the long-term success here of The Observer?
There's not really anyone in, I mean, it's like, I don't really want to mention names as far as people who I talk to, but I mean, I've worked with Brian forever and then the other people on the site now, you know, there's a lot of them. So, yeah, I mean, nobody else that I would really, I mean, I have a lot of friends, you know, that have been around for years and years and decades and decades in many cases that have helped out for sure. Yeah.
So when it comes to, you know, MMA and WWE kind of crossing over, why is it that Ken Shamrock really doesn't get enough recognition or love? Because he was kind of the first guy there that, you know, kind of crossed things over and made it possible for future stars.
You know, the problem with Ken Shamrock is he came at a time when there were Steve Austin and people like that, that were just so big. And Ken's pretty big for a while, but, you know, there were so many guys, there were just guys that were bigger, that got over better. I think Ken could have been used better. And even people in WWE, you know, Vince didn't really get UFC, get like the potential of Ken in some ways. Not that he didn't do well there, he did, but I don't think Vince fully ever grasped the idea of bringing in fighters like say how New Japan does. Yeah. You know, we did it with Shibata or somebody like that, where it there's, you know, where Suzuki's probably even a better example, where you don't have them wrestle like everybody else. Like with Ken, they tried to teach him, okay, this is how you do pro wrestling. Where Suzuki, you watch him, I think I always tell people they're fighters when they go like, you know, about pro wrestling, you know, like whatever. And I go like, don't study WWE wrestlers, study Suzuki, because the deal is that you want to use your reality to make a different kind of performance. Just don't go in there and go, I'm going to learn to do pro wrestling. It's like, well, then what good is your fighting background if you're going to just be like everybody else, you know? So I always look at Suzuki as the example of the guy who, if you are a legitimate fighter, you know, you should work like, you can't copy him, but you should learn from him more than anybody else.
Yeah, especially when you're coming in or you're, you know, you're legit. For you, in your opinion, who meant the most to UFC? Who was the biggest draw out of the following three people? Brock Lesnar, Conor McGregor, or Ronda Rousey?
I mean, Conor McGregor was the biggest draw in the history of UFC, for sure. As far as the one who meant the most historically, I would say Ronda Rousey, because, you know, women's fighting is accepted now. I mean, it's not a specialty, not a special attraction. It's just part of the thing. And when she started, like, if it was not for her, I think at some point UFC would have brought in women because everybody else would have, but they vowed for years, we will never have women. We will never have women, never women. And then it was Dana when he went to, I mean, when Dana's went to, I mean, they had interest in Gina Carano. I mean, but even then it was kind of like, well, let's put her in WEC. We won't put him in UFC. But when Dana went to, cause I was texting him back and forth that day, that weekend where he went to see the Ronda Rousey, Misha Tate fight for in Columbus, Ohio. And at that point he was just like, we've got to get this. And he just saw like the interest level. They told a lot of tickets late. There was a lot of, you know, he just felt it. You know, if you're a promoter, you should be able to recognize it. And he did. And at that point, you know, reversed his thing and went full court on Ronda Rousey. And, you know, Ronda absolutely changed the game. She's for pro wrestling too, which she'll never get credit for just because she didn't stay very long. But, you know, women, there was not going to ever be that all women's pay-per-view without Ronda Rousey. Of course, they never did another one. I don't know why. And there would not have been women main eventing WrestleMania either if it wasn't for Ronda Rousey.
Absolutely. And you of course, rightfully so, gave Ronda some high praise. She did a great job there. Curious to hear from you. You don't have to give us much, maybe one or two. What are some of the worst rated matches recently you've had? I mean, to me, anytime you put Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton in the ring, it's horrible. I mean, the House of Horrors match was horrible, and the WrestleMania match was just as bad. But in your opinion, some matches that were total duds on big pay-per-views.
You mean one thing, like sometimes I'll see some matches where everything just falls apart. Often women's matches, because a lot of the women are on TV quicker than guys, especially if they're good looking. But the funny thing, I mean, with the Randy Orton thing, or like I remember the Randy Orton Edge match at WrestleMania. I mean, the rematch that they did where they, you know, the greatest match of all time thing. Well, really, I don't know if it was the greatest match of all time. It wasn't, but that was a fantastic match. I mean, this match is just great. But the WrestleMania match, I don't know what it was, but it was like they just went too long, and it was just
48 minutes or something. It was crazy.
It was like this is and you know, with no crowd, and it's just like, oh God, that was brutal. I don't know what it's about Randy Orton, because he's so great. I mean, he really is. He's such a, his character is great. He's over. But yeah, sometimes he just, I think maybe the deal is that they have so much confidence in Randy Orton being able to make a bad situation good, is that they put him in these really bad situations, and he's not that good to be able to pull that off. Because yeah, Randy Orton has been in some, I mean, a lot of people have been in bad matches, but for a guy as good as Randy Orton, but they're never straight wrestling matches other than the Mania match that you talked about, but they just, you know, they kept that one short, like really short. It was just like, it was like this big climax of this feud where Bray Wyatt was set on fire. And then this is it. This is how it ends. That was just like bad scripting that he was involved in. I mean, it wasn't like, it wasn't like they went out there for 20 minutes and stunk the joint out. Just where he's been put in really, really, really bad situations. And sometimes he's pulled it off. And then sometimes he hasn't pulled it off because the situations were so bad that he couldn't save them.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, the WrestleMania match with Edge there. So something came to my mind, you know, no fans. Joe and I have a strong belief, and we'll see what you think, that had there been fans, that arguably one of the biggest pops and greatest WrestleMania moments of all time would have been Otis and Mandy Rose kiss.
Might have been. I don't know biggest pops of all time, but it would have been big. Would have been big, yes, yes. That would have been big. You know what else would have been big? Drew McIntyre and Brock Lesnar. You know?
Yeah, there was a lot of that build was pretty good.
I mean, the build was good. And then they, you know, the beating him so quickly would have had, you know, would have resonated bigger had it been in a stadium, because people wouldn't have expected it. And it would have been a big coronation, and he never did get that. But that whole era, you know, years from now, we're going to look back at that era and just go, that's amazing. The attempt to, you know, what some of these guys had to pull off, because wrestling with no crowds is like, boy, is that hard.
Yeah. And ultimately, I don't think WWE gets kind of enough credit for what they've been able to do, because I do think that Roman Reigns, Drew McIntyre, Bobby Lashley, and now Big E, I think they, over the last year or so, have really done ultimately the best work of their whole careers. So I just kind of wanted to throw in that there, but we'll get to performers. I wanted to ask you your personal Mount Rushmore of performers. Now, you go back in the history of the business, and, you know, I don't know what you define as a great performer. I don't know if it's essentially somebody who stands out above the rest, somebody who could draw. Obviously, people like Bruno Sammartino, Flair, Hogan, Rock, Austin, Cena, even Undertaker, right? Those are kind of the first names who come to mind. But who would be on your Mount Rushmore of performers? And I would ask you your personal favorites.
Man, that's hard, because there's so many different people. It's so hard for me to do this. Like, if I'm going to do it on just star power, and drawing power, and everything like that, I could go Austin, Rock, Bruno Sammartino, Hogan. Antonio Inoki has to be there too. You know, people that I saw. And then before that, you know, Santo and Ricky Dozan have to be, you know, so, I mean, of all time, Hogan, Ricky Dozan Santo, and Jim Londos, as far as like drawing cards, performers in the ring is so different, and there's so many and they're so varied. And really the guys now are so far ahead of the guys in the past, but you have to respect the groundbreaking trendsetters and everything like that. And then, you know, other guys like Bret Hart stuff is kind of like timeless, and Tanahashi's will be as well. So there's that too. But you know, I mean, also people like forget like Fujinami was great. You know, Ray Stevens, Ric Flair, you know, today's guys, Okada, Kenny Omega, Brian Danielson, Tanahashi for sure. I mean, those are kind of the guys that like, there's probably others. Let me think about this. Shawn Michaels, you know, Kenny Kobashi, Jumbo Tsuruta. There's so many. There's just so many. Yeah.
Mr. WrestleMania. I think he's with a losing record at WrestleMania.
Yeah, but he did. You have to give him credit as far as when it came to WrestleMania. I mean, he had matches with Vince. You know what I mean? So just like, you know, he pulled off incredible matches at WrestleMania almost every time out.
Speaking of Vince, to ask you quick, what is your relationship right now with Vince? Is it good, bad? Do you have a relationship?
I don't know that I have one today. I haven't talked to him since in a couple of years. I mean, with other people in the company, it's, I would say, fairly good. I would put it this way. If we were in the same place, we would definitely talk. I would think that they would grab me and go, hey, you know, Vince wants to talk to you. Because the last time we were in the same place, that's what happened. Mm-hmm. But no, he doesn't call me anymore. He used to call me, you know, but it was a different era. It was a very different era when that happened. If AEW, the more popular AEW gets and the less popular WWE gets, the more likely I'll hear from Vince. Because Vince will you know, but I think in his age, I don't know that it might be like I would hear more from his direct underlings as much as anything. But WWE is far, far, far more cooperative than number two than their number one. But it doesn't, no, they're not going to be number two for a while.
Interesting.
Wow.
You know, something I have noticed, and you know, sometimes you'll go back with people at this, but why do you think that fans, or maybe you know, the hardcore select few on your Twitter, hate the celebrity engagement with WWE, and you know, hate when celebrities come in, because ultimately that's really what WrestleMania was built on. The first few ones, it's always a big celebrity, and
well, that's what made the company. Mr. T and Cyndi Lauper. You take them out of the history of WWE, and they expansion probably fails to a degree, because the first WrestleMania. If they're not involved, the first WrestleMania is a flop. They lose me. And I mean, I don't know if they go out of business, but they could have, but it would have hurt badly. So no, WWE's, yeah, I don't mind that. I mean, I think people resent certain aspects of it, but you know, like it's a different world, but still when it comes to like, you know, something that would draw interest to the product, I'm always all for it. I don't care if it's, you know, people getting mad at AEW for using Mike Tyson. It's like AEW needs to get their name out. And, you know, getting Mike Tyson or Shaquille O'Neal on the show is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. Are they going to have the best wrestling match on the show? No. But, you know, just great wrestling match and nothing else, that's not enough either. You need more than just a slew of great wrestling matches to get a company over.
Speaking of what constitutes a great wrestling match, I have a lot of friends who wanted me to ask you this question personally. Is there a certain formula, or is there a certain way that you construct the rating system that you personally use? And one of my friends in particular, he asked me, does he have a bias against WWE? Why doesn't he get 5-star matches to WWE?
I do all the time. I mean, with NXT.
Ultimately, I think it comes down to personal preference, though. But well, I wanted to ask you, there are certain aspects of the match that you look for specifically that make up the rating system.
Okay, so with WWE, I mean, it's like the matches generally don't get that same level of heat, so that hurts. Sometimes big ones do, but are also very formulaic, very predictable. So maybe, and they're limited. They're limited in what they can do, you know? So, I mean, it's like they don't, WWE, I mean, sometimes they'll do stuff that blows you away, but it's not really that often. More, they're so patterned. So I think that probably hurts, because I mean, it's like, look at just an example, like, okay, Bryan Danielson's one of the best wrestlers in the world, and he had great matches in WWE, but I mean, he never had a match in WWE like he's having now. Right. And he'll say it, you know, it's like, it's just more, he's allowed to do more things to have a great match than in WWE, where you're just limited. There's like, we don't want you to do this, or you got to do this to fit into the commercial break. Although you have that in AEW television as well, but it's just, you can't do this and you can't do this because this guy, maybe, you know, so it's like the latitude allowed in WWE is less. So I think that's really what it is. You know, as far as that goes. Also with WWE, there's always in that top mix, when they're judging that top mix so much based on looks, mm-hmm. and not on performance ability, even though the guys can perform, I'm not trying to say that they can't, but looks is so important in the WWE compared to everybody else, the body, the face and all that, that you're not going to have the best against the best, like you might have somewhere else where they only care about having the best match, not about how good looking the guy happens to be. Even though a lot of those guys may be good looking too, but it's not like it's the crux of how you're matched up. And so, you know, there's ability. And again, like a Minoru Suzuki couldn't go to WWE and have good matches. They wouldn't let him do that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of guys would not be allowed to do. Kenny Omega would have been toned down if he went to WWE. You know, it's just a different thing. So it's not impossible. And I've seen some incredible WWE matches, and even better, some of the NXT matches. But the NXT, the thing with the NXT guys is that they did those matches. And it's funny because some went to WWE and never did matches that good again. But, you know, again, they're smaller, which I think helps in the sense that you can do more, you have more stamina, you can get it quicker and things like that. So there's a million different reasons, you know, but I don't know. I mean, it's funny. I'll watch a four-star match, I get 4 stars in WWE, and then one match, I get 4 stars in New Japan. And always, without fail, I always go, how can I rate these the same? The New Japan match was twice as good, because it's like, there's a standard. WWE has it easier. They don't have it harder. But there's a standard when everyone's having a match at this level, it's a lot harder to stand out, which actually means that, you know, the standout New Japan matches are actually way, way better than sometimes they're given credit for, because they have to follow Ishii. You know what I mean? They're not following, you know, The Miz, you know, which is a terrible example, what I just said, because it's,
Miz is great.
Yeah.
Miz has gotten a lot better. A lot.
He got rigged. He got screwed on Dancing with the Stars. I wanted to.
He did.
With that mirror ball, that would have been incredible.
Yeah. I didn't watch, I only saw the first week of Dancing with the Stars. I didn't think of it because Sunday nights and I was so busy, but yeah, so I can't say if he was screwed or not.
So how do you rank, you know, these promos? I mean, every week, coming up next, CM Punk addresses the audience. So, I mean, it's every week, it's the same thing with there. But how do you say what quantifies for you? What's a good promo?
Just when it's over, you kind of, If I feel like I'm in awe of the work, then to me it's a good promo. And if it's like just like, okay, that's nice, then it was okay.
Yeah.
You know, something that gets you, you know, whether it's, sometimes it's just one line, sometimes it's the whole promo. It's the feel like if they do a promo back and forth and at the end it's like, I really want to watch this match, then they did a good job. If I watch the promo and I go, well, I'm kind of entertained, I don't care if I watch this match or not, then it's not quite as good. And if I do a promo where I go like, why go so long? They could have said this in 2 minutes and they're out there for 15. That's not on them. That's on the people who booked it.
Cody Rhodes, Anthony Gogo weigh in. I mean, that was
an attempt.
Give us a short list of some of the best promos, people right now.
Guys now?
Yeah. Right now.
Oh man. Tanahashi. Yeah, Jericho. Yeah, for sure. Eddie Kingston's fantastic. Yeah. Moxley's very good. Really, really good. Cody can be really good when he's got the material. Omega and Callis are a good act. Callis is really good. Paul Heyman is great, especially not so much in a long promo. I mean, he can do it, but Paul Heyman's great as just like this little subtle stuff that he does. He's interacting like with Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is tremendous now. I think that he's really good.
How about The Miz?
The Miz is very, very entertaining. He's a very entertaining talker, but he does not make you want to see his matches when he does the promos. And sometimes when he's out there for too long, which is, again, not his fault, I think that they have so much confidence in certain guys. Triple H would be a perfect example of this. I think Triple H was a really, really good promo, but they had so much confidence in him, and he had so much confidence in himself that he'd be out there for 20 minutes. And it's just like,
yeah,
you know, like blow up the, you know, I remember Missy Hyatt wrote this once on Twitter, and it was, I don't remember who it was, but it was one of those opening promos on Raw. And she just goes, if they're still out there at the 15-minute mark, they should just blow up the ring. Nobody needs to do a 15-minute promo ever. It's just like, it's just too long.
Yeah. So I did want to ask you about your appearances on Dark Side of the Ring. How did that come about for you? Because it seems like they really should put you on every episode. And do you see yourself in a few years from now being a guest on the Dark Side of the Ring, and where they're covering the 2021 mass layoffs in WWE?
I don't know what the future is for Dark Side of the Ring. I mean, there's still certainly some topics that they get into. I mean, the one I'd like to see them do is that that hostage thing in Saudi Arabia, especially now that, because originally you couldn't do it because everybody worked for WWE, but a lot of those guys have been laid off. So yeah, they'll talk now. So I think that like the plane ride from hell was, but the plane ride from hell ended up being so controversial. I don't know. That one was, man, the fallout of that one was crazy. But I mean, yeah, they just called me, and the episodes they want me in, I'll do, you know. I mean, I don't know, people have said certain things. All I can say is that I never feel that anything I've said has been manipulated or taken out of context when I've been on. So I'm fine. You know, I'm not, I mean, you know, I think that overall they've tackled some really, really interesting subjects, and they've done some phenomenal, you know, the Pillman one was phenomenal. The Owen Hart one was phenomenal. Those are pretty much my favorites. The Benoit one, of course, was really good too. The Von Erichs one was really good. I like that one a lot for very different reasons. Gino one was fascinating in its own way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they've had a lot of really good episodes of Dark Side of the Ring.
Yeah, very good stuff. So I kind of joked about it, but you know, all the layoffs. Were you surprised not to see Elias get released? And if not, like, what are they doing with this guy? He still isn't seeking revenge for getting hit by a car. We don't know who hit him, even though the hacker was there. I mean, just 3 years ago, he has the whole crowd chanting, "We are assholes," because that's what he called them, essentially. It seemed like he was going to be a megastar, but now he's just, I don't know what's going on. But what are you hearing?
Well, about? Last I remember, he ditched the guitar, which was his whole gimmick, because he wanted to be taken seriously as a wrestler. And all I thought was, is that play to your strengths. Okay. Yeah. His strengths is in wrestling isn't terrible, but it's nothing special. He's just a guy in the ring. His mannerisms when he was doing the guitar stuff was really good.
Yeah.
So why are you taking away what's good and trying to make him into, you know, like Daniel Bryan? Because he's not, and he'll never be. That was weird. And then he never came back.
Right. Like, and this is a guy, three WrestleManias in a row, he's involved with The Undertaker and John Cena.
Yeah. And he just, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have been shocked to see him gone. Maybe he got vaccinated. They didn't get, I don't know. I mean, they did all this buildup for the guy. And I mean, at least he should have come back. He never did.
Was that the primary reason for the layoffs? The whole, because that's been circulated on Twitter and social.
In some of the cases, not in all, because if you look at them, they're not people that were used anyway. I mean, in the end, when you look at the list, most of them would have been, what I could tell you is that there are people who were not vaccinated that were on the list. And I asked, and I just was like, were you given a warning that if you don't get vaccinated, you're going to be fired. No, no, no. And this is from multiple people. So they should have, if that was the reason, it was in some cases, they should have at least given them and just said, look, we're going to fire you if you don't get vaccinated. And if that was the case, then that's on them. That's their choice. But they did not even do that. They just cut it. You know, I think that they just, somebody just came in and just said, okay, you got to get rid of 18 people. And those were the 18 people they got rid of. And they're mostly people that weren't being used on TV right now.
The evolution's over. It just started.
I mean, but with her, it's like she left to do a movie. Yes. She wasn't getting over. You know, I hate to say this, but it's very clear they're looking for youth, and she was 37. So, yeah. I mean, all those hurt. The only ones that surprised me was Cross, only because I was literally told two or three days ago that Vince McMahon did not like the character, nor did anyone else, and was going to repackage him, and they wanted to change him. So when I heard that, it's kind of like, well, they're looking at repackaging him, and then he's gone. So, and also like so high on him when they first got him. And, and you know, it's funny because his wrestling was fine, but when he was in NXT, the whole persona with Scarlett and the ring entrance was so like, I saw that and it goes, okay, this guy, he's going to be a major league star just with his ring entrance. So they bring him up to the main roster and the ring entrance is gone and she's gone. It's like, why do you like, they were in the league that is not the theatrical league. That's more of the wrestling league. So fit in is great because he's not that great of a wrestler, but both theatrics were off the charts. So it's like, he gets to the theatrical league. He's going to do great. He gets there and they take away all the theatrics. It's like, I didn't understand. I'll never understand that. You know, it's like, if that's what you're good at and you know, I mean, WWE would actually be the best place for him. So that one surprised me. Nia surprised me.
Nia was surprising because of her family members. I mean, they're the top dogs.
Yeah, but not just that. Vince always protected her. You know, when her and Shayna were a tag team, whenever they had to lose, Shayna was always the one to lose. Or if Nia would lose, there was always a good excuse. She never lost clean. And they always she kind of looked tough because she's bigger than everybody else. And
yeah, well, she serves that certain role that they just didn't have anywhere else. Right. I mean, now they probably have it because if they want to really, really push Raquel Gonzalez, you know, maybe she's not the same type of performer as Nia is. But again, you know, when you need that, you know, that ultimately that bigger performer that the ladies simply don't have. I mean, that situation kind of lends itself, right?
Yeah, I could see that the idea, but still you would still Nia still was unique compared to Raquel Gonzalez or Rhea Ripley.
She's not like most girls.
She's not like most girls. Exactly. But also, yeah, the family ties. Not, you know, it's like that one surprised me. I mean, I guess, you know, what happened was that was probably exactly what she said, that they wanted her to come back on the 15th. And she said, I'm mentally not ready. And they said, OK, you're gone. I mean, which is kind of cruel, but that's probably, you know, probably they felt maybe they felt that she had gotten to, you know, thinking that she dictated stuff. Who knows? When you know, right now, but it's a bad situation because there's two things that are happening right now. Because who's the one? Somebody got it's like if you cut people when they're injured, you're telling people to cover up their injuries, which leads to bad things. Yeah. When you know, and when you give people time off because they just time off mentally, which is a good thing. We didn't have that 10 years ago in wrestling. But then when you fire them while they're doing that, then you're telling everyone, okay, we'll give you time off, but guess what? You're also likely to get fired if we give you the time off. It's kind of like that fear back. And well, I better, if she got fired for asking for time off and Vince liked her and she had the family connections, man, I better, if I'm in a bad way, I better not ask for help because yeah. they may give me the help, but when the next rounds of firings come,
I may be
on that list. So,
you know, right away when people are fired, everyone's like, oh, they're going to AEW. I mean, WWE is getting a bad backlash for releasing people. Meanwhile, ROH released their whole roster, essentially.
But they did.
For all these wrestlers that are apparently going to AEW, I mean, is AEW going to have to now get a third show on another Turner Network True TV just to have, and they could call it like, you know, the former WWEers. Like, what are they going to do here?
I don't think they take too many of the guys. I mean, there's, you know, with the entire ROH roster now being available and these 18 people, I mean, you know, they took Bobby Fish and nothing against Bobby Fish. I mean, he's fine. He's a good wrestler. But I don't know how many of these guys that you can take.
I think it's more likely they take like an Ember Moon or Nia Jax to boost the women's division.
I don't know about Nia Jax. Maybe yes. Ember Moon, I see Ember Moon. I could see Ember Moon. That one would probably be because they could use more women wrestlers, and she's plus getting away from WWE. She have more leeway in what she can do, and she might stand out a lot.
They pushed her like right away to the top of the card. So,
yeah, and Ember really is actually better than Ruby as far as like all around wrestler. Ruby really lucked out. I'm not kidding with that. Right place, she was right place at the time with the right song, and just when she would come out and would smile because she was so unhappy in WWE and you never saw it before, so happy. And just that being happy, like, kind of made her a star. I mean, I saw it on the first night when she debuted in that casino thing, and she comes out in the press conference and she is so happy. And it's like, you can't help but like her. And when she was in WWE, I never had that feeling with her. Like, oh my God, look at her. You can't help but like her. And that the key in wrestling is to make the people like you or hate you, one or the other. If they're ambivalent about you, that's not a good thing.
So it seems as if All Elite Wrestling here has caught lightning in a bottle. They've only been around for now basically 3 years going on. And I think the growth, I think, has far superseded anybody's expectations. Obviously, they're backed by the Khans and they have more money than Vince, the millionaire who should be a billionaire. I wanted to ask you here because you kind of alluded to a little bit before the idea of maybe WWE becoming the second company again. That's probably something that's more 5 to 10 years down the line. But do you think AEW's current growth and trajectory is ultimately sustainable? And what do you think they should be working towards in particular to continue on that trajectory that they're on now?
That's a tough question. I think that the keys to them right now is trying to figure out a way to get their television in more international markets, because that's where WWE has a huge, huge advantage. And then, you know, and they are trying to do the one thing, which is portraying themselves as competitive with WWE, because WWE is making so much money whether it's selling of the network, whether it's TV rights and everything like that. And that's got to be AEW's goal, to be able to, even if they get WWE money, if they get half WWE money, then they'll be so financially successful, it's not even funny. So the keys to me for AEW is business growth more than the booking. Continually bringing in stars. The video game, perhaps. But again, to have a successful video game, you have to have a successful franchise. So you have to make fans. So they always have to make more fans. That's the thing. And it's tough. And I don't know that anyone knows the real secret. That, you know, they've grown, you know, they're going in their way. I don't think that, you know, I don't want to say that they'll never be bigger than WWE, because it's possible. That should never be even the goal right now. I mean, yeah, I know that one of the goals is to beat them in the ratings and, you know, and all that, but I think that the goal needs to be the best AEW that you can be and worry about WWE, but learn from WWE in the sense of, you know, like, look at all these different business things that they're doing and diversify and, you know, expand, like, again, expand into foreign countries. And then once travel is allowed, start going into foreign countries and solidifying yourself. And there are places that WWE doesn't serve as well, and maybe you could be the A promotion in some of those places. But it's, you know, AEW thing, it's a long-term play. They've done great. I think that they've done absolutely great for the, you know, not perfect, but they've done absolutely great for the first couple of years. But, you know, if they're successful or not, that's going to be determined 7 years from now when we look back. It's not, you know, it's not, you know, the flash in the pan is, you know, it's been good and people remember it all, but in the big picture, it's the longevity.
Yeah. And I mean, the biggest name in wrestling right now is Khan, Nick and Tony.
Nick and Tony. You
know, yep. Nick seems vicious. I want to ask you this because, you know, what was the deal?
Nick is a really smart guy when it comes to, when it comes to the media. When it comes to the landscape, Nick is way ahead of the curve. I mean, even just in the call yesterday, Nick's talking about things. Nick Khan lived 3 years from now. Okay. Most people try to live for today. I know some people lived 20 years ago, and which is kind of too bad because they're really smart. They lived 20 years ago, and it's very difficult to navigate in the current world when you're living 20 years ago. If you're living 5 years ago, it's difficult. Nick lives 3 years from now, maybe 5 years from now. And, you know, like, where is, it's like, not like, where is Fox today? It's like, who is going to own Fox in 3 years? Is it going to be these people? Is a bigger company going to buy them? We have to, if a bigger company is going to buy them, we have to find out who that company is before they buy them, so we can indoctrinate ourselves to them. Because if we are, just an example, if we are the Murdoch's guy, and then somebody buys the Murdoch's, well, we're the Murdoch's guy. You're gone. But if we're, let's just throw out a who knows who. If they say buy Fox and we know them and we are with them and we're their guys, then we're safe. So it's kind of like that's the Nick Khan, with the way he thinks, which is so he's a very impressive person for sure.
That's why he was such a great agent. And you know, that's what I want to ask you, because one of his clients was Adnan Virk, the Virk horse. What happened there? It seemed like Adnan.
He wasn't ready.
Perfect.
Oh boy.
Okay. So the deal is that they wanted to bring in sports guys to do announcing for wrestling. And, you know, Jimmy Smith actually has worked out pretty well, and so's McAfee. Adnan didn't. He wasn't ready for it. It was a bad hire. And that was Nick's guy, but it was a bad hire.
Yeah, I thought he was getting better, but I mean, it's tough to just get thrown onto Raw the night after WrestleMania, I think.
Oh, brutal. And you know, again, he wasn't a big enough fan. I mean, Jimmy Smith wasn't really a fan at all, but somehow, you know, he made it work. I mean, Jimmy Smith was not a wrestling fan. And so now he sounds like he's this big wrestling fan.
You know what was crazy with him was that he said when he got the job, he was like, oh, I've been preparing for this for 5 months. Like, how, if Adnan had the job, did they tell him like, hey, be ready? Like in case
they were always doing that. They were, you know, yeah. So, it's funny with him, because like, again, like I knew all those MMA guys. So I know the MMA guys who are wrestling fans, and he wasn't, like I said, he wasn't one of them.
Yeah. I think ultimately we're going to see Adnan doing some Peacock specials. Khan will bring him back in, little studio hosting. Cause yeah, they're good guys. I think.
Yeah.
All right. Lastly here, as we start to wrap up real quick, it seems that the writing's on the wall that we're going to have Brock Lesnar maybe win the Royal Rumble, comes back. But I want to know, are we ultimately at Crown Jewel next year going to see Brock Lesnar versus Tyson Fury? We got to have Tyson Fury back in the mix here. It's a huge match.
Well, I mean, they were going to do Tyson Fury and Drew at a stadium in the UK. I mean, that was like the plan, and they couldn't do it. So I think that at some point, I think they like Tyson Fury and the fact that Tyson Fury is a champ and will do their stuff. And I heard he worked very hard in training. So yeah, I expect it's got to be the WrestleMania or a big show in the UK or Saudi Arabia, because it's a big money expense. So you've got to justify it in one of those ways.
Yeah. All right. Last question for me, and then Joe's going to wrap it up here, but you know, this is called You Know I'm Right for a reason. We always got to ask our guests this question. What was your You Know I'm Right moment? It could be in your life, your career. And what we mean by that is when basically, you know, you said to somebody, hey, they don't want to do this or whatever. And they said, no, Dave, you can't do that. Like, that doesn't work. You got to be traditional. And you said, you know what? I'm going to do it my way. And ultimately, you will see why I am right.
Well, it's funny because I didn't even think that I was right when I started doing the Observer. I mean, and stopping working as a regular sports writer. It was just one of those things where it was a very emotional, non-logical decision. But I don't know, as far as like, you know, I'm right is more my when I go back, certain things that I said were going to happen in wrestling that did, whether it was, the death of WCW, where I called it when they were at their peak. I didn't call the death because I called the fall. Something like that, or maybe, I don't know. I mean, it almost feels like AEW is one of them, but I knew the potential. I knew that and all this, but, so maybe to a degree, because everyone's like jumped on me over AEW, and AEW ended up being success, but it was like, so maybe, I don't know. I don't really, but maybe just overall track record as far as like, what's going to go up and what's going to go down, and certain guys, that ended up being big, big stars. And other guys, not everyone did, but the ones who didn't, I think in most cases were because they were mismanaged more than they didn't have the potential to be the big stars. Because I look at, it's funny when you look at guys where you like say can't miss and they missed. But I think that if they were in another place, they would have been can't miss, put it that way.
So you mentioned the death of the WCW. Quick book plug for Brian Alvarez. Go buy it. Hopefully he listens to this and he enjoys that. Dave, last part from me. I've been nervous and anxious the whole time, but I wanted to tell you that I would say about a year or so ago, I came at you on Twitter and I was one of those asshat idiot loser fans who came at you, and you actually had me blocked. So I wanted to formally apologize to you. I wanted to do this podcast with you and Nick and I. I wanted everything to go really well. Everything has gone really well. You were so much fun. We had a blast doing this. You were so important to the history of the industry, and I want to make amends. I appreciate that. Thank you. Again, I was very nervous this whole time, very anxious, but this was so much fun to do. So you made it very, very easy for us. And it is now time for us to let you go. So what we do here is we always give our guests the last words. And obviously anybody who's a hardcore wrestling fan will be able to know where to find you. But if there's anything else you would like to promote, and if there's anything you would like to share, please go right ahead. The floor is all yours. Dave, thank you so much again for doing this with us. We really, really appreciate it. We're grateful for it.
Okay. Yeah. I plug the Observer, put it out every week. I work so hard on that every single week with all the news from everywhere and things like that. But also I got a couple of books. I got a new book coming out for Christmas. It's going to be the book on 1999 pro wrestling, which is the decline of WCW and the ascent of WWE, and also everything that was going on in the rest of the world as well. But one of the more interesting years. And we already got books up for, couple other years as well. 1997 was the first book, 1993. So there's a couple of books out there right now, and there will be hopefully about two more each year, or so hopefully maybe more, depending on the interest and everything like that. But hopefully the new book does real well, because it's an interesting year, and we were talking about maybe doing some way back years and maybe some more current years as well. So anyway, there's that. And of course I do podcasts multiple times a week with Brian Alvarez and Garrett Gonzalez on wrestlingobserver.com.
Excellent. Well, Dave, it's been an absolute pleasure. We could have kept you on for hours and hours more. There's always we appreciate your time. Hopefully we get a 5-star podcast review for this episode in our ratings. But that's going to do it here for this episode of You Know I'm Right, for our incredible special guest, Dave Meltzer, and my co-host, Joe Calabrese. I'm Nick Durst, and this has been You Know I'm Right.